You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey kids,
look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance off, bro, me and you.
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
I'm Adam Bishop.
I'm Chris Ellis.
I'm the Hey Kids Comics Desperado.
I'm Batman.
Who's a villain in Captain Canuck? What does he do?
Taking our maple syrup, eh?
I'm gonna chuck my hockey puck in my beer bottle at you. Take off, you hoser.
Gwenpool, I mean, Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is gonna be worth a few bucks.
And nobody wanted it.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
When you're trying to come up with an offensive movie that you want to reclaim, it's time to segue into the next porn comic segment, Adam.
How can you not have seen Airplane? What are you guys, young?
I talked to him directly, so I got a mass order. So I have like a good 5-inch stack inside my comic book box.
Right on.
That's below average.
Halt! Smash!
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
Martin Bruda.
5-inch Adam.
5-inch Adam.
That's below average.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Hey, Friday night, comic books.
Wait, now you're pulling an Adam, which is going straight into comics.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's the best thing.
Don't we have to kill 5 minutes talking about nonsense first?
Sure. Sure. What nonsense you want to talk about?
I've got nothing. Anyway.
I'm losing very badly in my axe throwing league. Does that count?
Sure.
I think I'm ranked 24th out of 30.
It's not last.
It's not last.
When we went out axe throwing for Chris Gilpin's stag party, whatever, I don't know what you call it, but you were kicking butt there.
Well, the thing is I've been throwing axes for 5 years, once a year. Like when us cadets get together in the Christmas season when everybody comes home to visit their parents because they don't live with their parents like certain bums do. But anyways. We get together and we toss axes, right? And then we went with Chris's bachelor party, and I've gone a couple of other times. So, like I said, I've been throwing. So I get to this axe league, and the very first thing, they're like, okay, you're wrong foot, wrong hand, your wrist is wrong, everything's wrong. So they kind of taught me how I'm supposed to throw, and I just suck. I was doing so much better on my own, doing my own style.
I've got an idea. Forget everything they taught you.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently. Exactly. It's kind of funny because there's a red league and a black league, and the black league is the pros, right? The better guys. And these guys, that you're just watching them, every single one throws completely differently than the other one. One guy's got perfect form and a nice soft lob. Another guy's got horrible form with a nice soft lob. Another guy is like throwing it weird sideways, side-chucking it baseball style like they tell you not to. And these guys are like, bullseye, 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 bullseye. I'm like, oh, you guys suck. You're not teaching me anything. There's no technique there. You're all just doing stuff. You're all just got good eyesight.
Is it?
Young reflexes.
I suppose it's about as fun as professional darts. You know, when the competition is so good that they're getting bullseyes all the time.
Well, it's kind of funny because there's some guys there that are nationally ranked here in the Peterborough Club. Like, the one guy has, like, a sponsor. You know, he walks in with all these, I can't remember what it is, Gibson whiskey or something like this.
And everybody else is like, boo, you suck, sell out, get out of here.
He brings his own axes to throw?
Oh, yeah, everybody brings their own axes. I just bought my first axe. Oh, yeah, everybody brings their own axes and customizes them and makes them their own. And one guy's got a roofing hammer.
Do they weigh them before? And like,
yeah, you got to make sure they all up to spec. No double-ended axes, no axes with fiberglass. I bought one, it was black with a green handle. That's like the zombie edition. It's got this big huge thing on the back and the spike, and they're like, no. No, you can't throw that. So it's been fun.
You can't stop me from throwing it. You can just stop me from throwing it in here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they let you throw it after hours. Like after the league is done.
Just not competitively.
Yeah, just not competitively. But I'm getting there. It's all right.
I just got excited because I saw Martin's stack of books.
There's
Was it more than 5 inches?
No,
it's not more than 5 inches.
But it's high quality.
But there is a money shot in there. Pa-ching!
I still don't have book 2.
Really? Listen, that's funny. So, yeah, what Adam is alluding to, we might as well get right into it.
Comics!
Money Shots number 3. This book is wonky. This is the one that Adam brought to us because it had a very fancy special cover.
Yep.
And I immediately ran out and got issue 1 and issue 2, and this is issue 3. And I'm kind of surprised because reading issue 3, you really didn't need to read issue 1 or 2. I mean, this kind of tells you everything. This is like a huge starting off point. I'm not exactly sure what was the point of issue 1 and 2, but for those of you who don't know what this is, in the year 2027, an advanced civilization finds Earth, and Earth says, hey, how are you guys? And all of a sudden, it's like in Star Trek, right? When the Vulcans first landed, oh, now that you have star travel or whatever, we're going to welcome you into the greater spacefaring community. And because of this, they don't need science anymore because they just use other civilizations' advances. So why do we need science? So this is about a group of scientists who have no funding and they want to continue doing research. And they decide that they're going to raise money by having a YouTube-like channel where they have sex with other species. I mean, it's a whacked out premise, but it's hilarious. It's not done for, you know, it's not done for smut. It's done, you know, humorously, and it is an adult comic. It's not like they show anything strange or unusual. Definitely mm-hmm. not on Adam's scale, but it's a good story. Art's fantastic. It's fun. It's a pretty good book. So I bought Money Shot number 3. On the cover, there's a picture of a lady who very much looks like she's enjoying herself with a nuclear explosion coming out of her head. So somebody blew her mind. And needless to say, the fellow at the counter at Comic Book Addiction last weekend when I bought this, he kind of looked twice at the cover and wondered what the heck was going on when I was buying it. So, but it's a pretty good book from Vault Comics. Yeah, it's all right. Tim Seeley and Sarah Beattie Betty, and drawn by Rebecca Isaacs. Good book. So there we go. We did one serious comic book review.
Excellent.
What else we got?
But it still was about something involving nudity.
Well, yeah.
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 You guys.
Gilpin's not here. I got some sweetened butterscotch for you, if that's what you want. You want saccharine?
Butterscotch me up, baby.
All right. The other thing that came out this week is Archie and... I never know how to pronounce this. I always want to say Kathy Keene, but I think it's Katie Keene. Catty Keene. So Archie Comics, one more reboot, new issue number 1, but they got legacy numbering on it, so it's Archie Comics wow. 710. So Archie and Katie Keene.
So what you're saying is Marvel did change the industry.
Yeah, Marvel did change the industry forever. And so the basic premise here is that, you know, Katie Keene's coming back as a major character in I think she's getting a TV show, if I'm not mistaken. So it's going to be Sabrina, Riverdale, and Katie Keene, so they wanted to introduce her into this. And this is straight up Riverdale Archie. Sam, don't pick this up. There's no traditional Archie here. So I'm like, okay, cool. Let's first issue, let's take a look, right? Oh my God, is this... I don't want to curse on air, but this is crap.
Oh no.
This is the worst comic book I've ever read.
So it is the comic book equivalent of Riverdale.
Like, no, Riverdale is at least entertaining. Like, if I gave this book to my daughters, none of them would like it. None of them would be interested in this. Katie Keene is just like some kind of a Instagram... I almost said whore. I'm going to say trollop. An Instagram trollop that just wants Instagram hits and likes. And she's designing costumes all throughout the whole thing. Archie's a singer at a bar. And then Katie Keene comes out with another costume. The other girls are all fawning over her. There's a whole homage page here of Polaroid snapshots, even though this generation doesn't even know how to spell Polaroid, let alone what it is. And then all the girls get dressed up in matching. I don't know. What is this? Rainbow Bright?
Yeah, it's kind of Rainbow
Bright. Rainbow Bright costumes, and they all go rollerblading, and there's... I mean, this is supposed to be a kidsy kind of girly comic.
There's crotch shots.
There's a crotch shot right there. There's a butt shot there. And it's just... it's what's the word I'm looking for?
You already said crap.
Yeah. Just garbage.
Ooh, thanks, I hate it.
It's horrible. And the other thing is, like, I'm not sure who the target audience is, but the target audience is absolutely not girls 25 to 14 that have you know, brains in between their ears, because none of my kids would love this.
Or
none of them.
Or men who are 50.
Or men who are 50. Yeah. No, even men who are 50 wouldn't like this. You know, it doesn't have any appeal whatsoever. I don't know. I really honestly don't know who the target audience is. 9-year-old girls? Oh. Maybe? Like, it's bad. It doesn't even have that. Like, Archie Comics has always been a kids-oriented comic, right?
Does Marvel even put, like, the trademark names on the covers of their books?
I don't think they put the trademarks in the logos, no.
No. This is weird, too, yeah. Number 1 of 4. I'm predicting this gets cut down to 3 issues.
It's bad. Does that would say 1 of 4? Oh, it's just like a... Well, okay, yeah. I guess.
So why do they have legacy numbering on a miniseries?
Because at the end of 4 issues, they're going to reboot again. It's going to be called Archie and Sabrina? Archie and Jughead?
She looked like Gwen Stacy in it.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's just... I mean, there isn't even a story.
Where's the garbage can so you can throw it out?
Yeah, we need a receptacle bin. And every single advertisement in it, every single advertisement in it is for Archie products. It's almost like, you know, you just can't get advertising from other companies in your books anymore.
No.
Nobody wants to advertise in comic books because they know that no target demographic reads these things. But there's, like, every single ad. Oh, wait, I lied. There's one here for Nightmare on Elm Street action figures. But other than that, Archie, Riverdale High video game.
Wait, there's Freddy Krueger figures in there?
No. Nightmare Before Christmas. Did I say Nightmare Before Elm Street? No.
Oh. Yes.
All right, no. Nightmare Before Christmas. That's okay. I once called Captain Polska Captain Canuck once and freaked out an entire band of people thinking that I was writing a Captain Canuck story, which I most definitely was not. So, that's the 2 books I brought in. One was really good, and one was,
Did you bring anything, Dan?
Oh, I sure did. I was prepared last week, but we didn't have a show.
Okay. Well, I brought stuff, too, so let me get... No, I'm joking.
And... Much like Marty, I've got the good, the bad, and the ugly here with
Excellent.
Me. We'll start with the good, which is Dark
Nice.
Victory from Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. I may have brought this on the last show that we did, but I had just started it and I haven't read it before, and so I binged this, read 3/4 of it in one night, and Jeff Loeb is a writes a great Batman detective story.
Yeah.
You know, this one, there was The Long Halloween, which I've read and I enjoyed, and then Haunted Night that formed sort of a trilogy here. I haven't read Haunted Night, but so I read Dark Victory. Tim Sale's the artist on it. His art is, I wouldn't say I'm like the hugest fan, but it's, you know, it's not bad.
Right.
I enjoy it. The two of them have these 3 projects together. It's always good. And yeah, like they really do the detective Batman, you know, 13-issue detective story where every issue somebody dies until you finally figure out who the killer is to end the murder mystery.
Now, is this kind of in any way, shape or form a sequel to Long Halloween?
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
They
so it is kind of interconnected.
Yeah. They reference Long Halloween a
lot. I'll
have
to read this one because I don't think I've read that one.
The only thing that's mildly annoying is the first page. Well, the first 2 to 3 pages of every issue is them recapping in case you weren't caught up. So it's like, on Halloween night, 7 people were murdered by an unknown assailant, and this is the clues they left. And you're like, okay, like I'm reading this all in one sitting.
So
it's kind of annoying.
Well, what it is we know that the next issue is going to be late by months. So we're going to remind you of what you're reading. And then when they put it together as a trade graphic novel, you know, they didn't take out those pages.
Well, people would complain that they didn't get the entire comic in their trade.
Yeah.
Like, they took out pages on us. It's like, it was recaps of what you're reading right now.
Well,
I like the words.
They take out recaps in them all the time.
Yeah. They could edit it into a little bit of a nice, like, this is
back.
Not some kind of an archival
yes.
hardcover museum edition with everything. They took out the ads. They took out other stuff. They could have stitched it together a like little bit better.
I like when they have to add the blank page, they do the black ink.
Just
full black ink.
Yeah.
Like, let's waste money and ink all at the same time.
There you go.
When they have to keep the pages on the right side for the reveal.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For the double page spreads and stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's... I read Long Halloween when it first came out,
yep,
as single issues, and it was just astronomical. Such a good book.
Yeah.
Such a good book.
And now,
sorry, go ahead.
I read Long Halloween probably like 6 or 7 years ago and bought this one at the same time, and it's been sitting on my shelf, and I was just like, I'm going to read something that I haven't read. And I saw this, and I was like, that's the one. So I'm trying to read some older comics I've had for a while, older graphic novels that I've had for a while.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's the good.
Now, did Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, Marvel had a bunch of sort of kind of year one books. It was like Spider-Man Blue, if I'm not mistaken,
yes.
Hulk Gray. Was that?
Jeff Loeb, yes.
I know it was Jeff Loeb, but was that Tim Sale as well?
I don't know if Tim Sale was on that, like the Daredevil Yellow.
If only we had like, you know,
seven devices, the laptop,
some knowledge of internet, the entire library of Alexandria in front of us. So somebody talk while somebody else types. Not all three of us go silent while all three of us type.
Dan.
Yes.
Did you enjoy the book?
I sure did enjoy the book.
Better than Dead Air.
Is it really?
No.
Didn't Jeff Loeb write the Hush story as well for Batman? I think he did.
Did he ever write Lobo?
No.
Damn.
You're ruining the conversation.
There you go. Stop.
Hush, which was another, this is a standalone, like Elseworlds style tale that doesn't have continuity, whereas the Hush story was in continuity. But that was also a really good one, and maybe I'll read that again. Also, the only good Hush story, because I think they did like 3 Hush stories and they were progressively worse. Yeah.
So Hush was Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee art.
Yes, Jim Lee, yeah.
Daredevil Yellow, anyways, Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb wrote and Tim Sale drew. So I'm assuming that the other ones in that series from Marvel were also done by the pair.
And Jeff Loeb now does a lot of stuff for TV and movies, doesn't he?
Not anymore.
Well, I mean, like, as when I was paying attention to the TV and movies 5 years ago.
Jeff Loeb was Marvel TV.
Yeah.
He was the executive in charge of Marvel TV. And now that, of course, Disney sort of taken over everything and gave it all to Kevin Feige, Mr. Loeb has found himself without a job. So he chose to retire. It's one of those things where, did I get fired or did you let me leave gracefully? Or the writing was on the wall that whole division was being folded up and moved in. And so rather than, you know, oh, you lost your job because you're a bum. It's like, no, you did a great job, which he did. Marvel TV stuff was awesome, I think, personally. And gosh only knows what he's going to move on to now.
Is he still writing, like, comics?
I don't know.
Because, like, I feel like he's part of the old guard, you know, not any of the newer ones. This is from 2001. This is 20 years old, which is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, once you start getting into the production side, into things like Jeff Johns, they don't seem to be writing as much.
When you get fired or when you gracefully leave that job and you no longer have a job, you might go back to writing.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, we'll see how it goes. So, I don't know. I'm looking real quick at a comicography of Jeff's, and I don't see anything in particular that he's writing at the moment.
But stop trying to peek into my bag, Adam.
I'm looking really hard. I'm like, what's bad? What's bad?
No, this is...
Is it good bad or bad
no.
bad?
So, that's the good, and now here's something off the saying. This is the beautiful.
Oh, this is the beautiful.
So, I have this CGCSS slab that I have. Superman Confidential, signed by Darwin Cook and Tim Sale.
Oh, nice.
9.8.
That's nice.
So I picked that up. I picked that up when Darwin Cook passed, and I realized I'd never get to get his autograph myself personally. I went online, and I was like, I want to, like, because I really love his art, and I wanted to get something that he had autographed. So I bought that.
Well, this is neat. I didn't see this before. Maybe, is this on all signature series? It says here, signed by Darwin Cook and Tim Sale on, it gives the date, 2007, at Paradise Toronto Comic Con.
It doesn't always say where they sign it, but it does say the date.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
The plastic background, it got beat up a little bit, but yeah.
Oh, man, I got so many, like, Mylars for slabs. Let me know. I'll bring you one.
I just used Saran Wrap from Costco.
On your two slabs.
On my two slabs that are in boxes under my bed.
I got
slabs. Where they belong.
I got a slab for you.
Now, they're updating all these, right? All the labels? Did you see all the custom ones coming out?
Yeah, they've decided to kind of do some funk and groove and stuff. I think the first one they ever did was like a Stan Lee one.
There you go.
But now they're going nuts and making all sorts of custom
like
labels.
Like just plain straight up Hulk ones and
yeah,
yeah, all well, these other stupid things.
How often are you supposed to re-slab your slabs? Every 2 years?
Well, that's a bit of a misnomer. A lot of people talk about that and the fact that, you know, slabbing's not forever and you're supposed to re-slab and everything. What they said was that when they first came out with this stuff, there is a microchamber piece of paper inside that's supposed to absorb stuff. And they said that that piece of paper should be changed every 7 years. But now, since they've had slabs for so long, they've cracked open some that are 10, 15, 20 years old and not found any problems whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
So now they're kind of saying, no, you know what? It's not that big of a deal. Just let that's it run.
Good. Until they decide they need more money. And then it'll be change them as often as you change your bags and boards, which for me would be never anyways.
I'm going to put something in front of Martin. He might have already seen it. And I feel bad because you brought stuff for me, but I didn't bring anything for you, but I wanted you to see them.
Okay.
Up close so you can geek out. So a friend of mine grabbed me the Highlander board game, and it came with, what are those, like 1 inch probably? 1 inch miniatures of Connor McLeod, Ramirez, and the Kurgan.
Really? That's just three?
And a bunch of other, like, made-up characters.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, so, but yeah, they're super sweet.
Because I would totally, like, throw out my Monopoly characters and throw this in the Monopoly board and make everybody play with Highlander.
If you land
characters
on somebody, you take their head and they're out of the game.
I'm Connor McLeod from the Clan McLeod, born on the shores of Loch Sheen.
No, you know, you didn't get the French accent right.
Yeah. Those are super cool.
Yeah.
That's worth the board. I don't know. Have you tried the board game itself?
I looked at it and I was like, ugh. And I took up the pieces and I was just like, ugh. Like, I want to take them to the bathtub with me and be like, let's have little battles. Where's my bubble bath?
What does Connor always call Ramirez? A haggis?
Yeah. It's like, no, haggis. A goat? What's haggis? It's inside of a sheep's stomach. Ugh. Yeah. It's revolting.
It's revolting. Meanwhile, the Spaniards are eating like weird things too.
That's true.
Oh.
Okay, Dan. What's the bad?
Okay, so
now that we did our daily, or I guess our weekly Highlander geek out.
As I said, I was going through reading some graphic novels I've had for a while and not read. And the bad is Batman: The Chalice by Chuck Dixon and John Van Fleet. This is a true graphic novel, Chris Gilpin.
I have never read this.
So
this was isn't a collected one. It's just
it's a true graphic novel to throw some fire on that fire.
It's direct edition.
It's a true graphic novel in trade paperback format.
Oh, that's no. Correct. So just a graphic novel story where Bruce Wayne gets the Holy Grail and has to protect it.
What?
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Has to protect it from Ra's al Ghul. Of course.
I guess that'd be the most appropriate villain.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who John Van Fleet is, but...
You know, the art is very stylized, and I don't mind it.
It looks almost rotoscoped. Like, they... Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, the writing in this... Okay, besides the fact that the story is very cliched, just in general, yeah. Right? That Batman would get... That Bruce Wayne's family line traces back to the keepers of the Grail. Ugh. And he's next in line, and this guy dies and passes the Grail to him. He has to protect it. The writing, like the actual literal writing, is terrible. Like, he just keeps using the same words over and over again. Like, there's like three or four pages where Catwoman's in there calling Alfred Jeeves every time she talks. And it's just like, literally, like, what do you think about that, Jeeves? Jeeves, let's go do this. Jeeves, this. Jeeves. And I was just like, holy cow. Did nobody just, like, cross that out on the script and say, no, too many? It's ridiculous.
It does look like they just took pictures of people and ran it through a filter on a computer.
Yeah.
Well, when's it from? Because maybe that's what they did.
1999, it said.
There you go. That was probably the technology at the time.
I hate it.
And then the ending is that is Bruce realizing that he's not strong enough to stop to keep the Grail safe, and so he passes it off to Superman.
Well, what's with these samurai?
That's the Brotherhood trying to get the Grail back.
Does Superman just like squish it down to a ball and then eat it?
No, he flies it to the Fortress of Solitude.
And that's why Superman movies never worked.
I read it like in one night, and I only read it to have something to talk about. And here we are talking about it.
There you go.
It wasn't good.
Well, I think Sam blames Chuck Dixon for destroying Black Canary.
Yeah. I mean, Chuck Dixon is on the outs right now.
Oh, right? Yeah. He's so part of that whole...
He's a comic skater, so that's fine.
Nonsense.
I'm glad it sucks. So that's the bad.
What did he do? Did he do Hawkworld?
Not sure.
Did he do anything I like? I feel like he did something.
I know he wrote like Robin Year One.
Oh, no, I didn't.
I have that on my shelf and haven't read it. Are you saying I shouldn't read that next?
Oh, that was crap.
Yeah. Better or worse than Archie?
Oh, my gosh. He wrote issues 1 to 100 of Robin Volume 2.
That makes sense. You see those everywhere.
100 issues.
That costs $100. Because they're dollar bank
or less if you can get a deal.
This is true.
Yeah, if you offered to take all 100 issues off of the store's hand, they would definitely give you a deal.
50 cents each.
They would definitely give you a deal.
I'm pretty sure Guardian has all of those in the bins.
But are they good?
No.
You know, dollar store comics in the dollar bin aren't necessarily bad.
That's true. I have many.
And they're bad, so I've stopped looking in dollar bins because I've realized there's no point. The quality is dollar bin. So
that's my Christopher Lambert laugh.
Every movie.
Yeah, haggis. Oh well. Is what it is.
Adam's got something itching to show lap something that he can't wait to pull
out. Whip it out, Adam. What have you got?
I recently rewatched a movie based on a comic with my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. She claims that we never watched it. We did. She just forgot about it. She absolutely hated it.
Well,
it's one of my favorites, which is Ghost World.
Ghost World.
Have you seen it or read the book?
The Criterion Collection. I have never actually seen this.
No? I love the movie. I have the book at home. I've never read it.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is Thor Birch, Steve Buscemi, and Scarlett Johansson. And
I haven't seen it either.
You haven't seen it? Oh, no.
You got the Criterion subscription, don't you?
Yeah, we've got the Criterion subscription.
Yeah, you're going to have to watch it.
I think we own a regular version of this one. I just haven't seen it.
The regular version has the two girls standing on the cover in a white background on DVD. I have it on DVD as well, but yeah, I grabbed the Criterion edition.
Why haven't you read the comic?
The same reason why Marty hasn't read his to-read stack as well.
Oh my goodness.
Procrastination.
Actually have a massive stack to read?
Or do
you just get distracted by the porn comics?
Oh, just flipping the pages slowly.
So you watch the movie, what's it about?
It's about these two students who just graduated high school that have no plans to go to college like all their other peers. And they just bum around town, trying to get jobs and befriending this really sad middle-aged man who likes records.
Well, I think we know a few.
I was going to say, it reminds me of a few people that know and or are in this room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, yeah. It's
substitute records for comics, and you've nailed me down to a T.
Yeah, he has. And he works at a KFC like restaurant, but he works in, I think, advertising. Yeah.
So you need to read the issues and let us know if it's worth reading the comic.
Well, I don't know if they released it in issues or if it was just a graphic novel. I'm actually not sure.
But no, you said you have it.
I think
I have the...
Well, then read it.
I have
it.
I just don't know if it was released like as...
I'm not Chris Gilpin. I don't care if it was released.
I feel like
all
it was
I care about
issued.
Is that you read it.
I feel like it was issued as single issues. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. Of course, the second you The second you Google it, the first thing that comes up is the movie.
I feel like most people don't even know that it was a comic.
Rewatching it, Scarlett Johansson's voice is very deep. And I don't know if that was like a character thing or if that's how she talked originally.
And then she's just Hollywooded her voice.
It's her like talking out of her chest, like, or talking into her chest the whole time.
Okay. I believe it was serialized in issues 11 to 18 of the comic book called 8-Ball.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which is why there's a miniaturized version of 8-Ball in that DVD Criterion case.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm working on my Scarlett Johansson impression.
Perfect.
There you go.
Absolutely perfect.
What does she say to the Hulk? Sleep my baby by or whatever? Or... Anyways.
I watch those movies in passing. I don't know.
There you go. But, I haven't, it's so totally not on my radar when it was out as a comic. That was, all the stuff from Fantagraphics, all those books, Love and Rockets, what's the one that Sam really liked that kind of got rebooted there? Strangers in Paradise. All of those kind of artsy type books, when they were coming out at that time, I'm like, where's the pouches? Where's the pouches?
And the capes.
Where's the pouches and all the guns? There's no guns. There's no pouches.
Insert meme about covers with hot chicks.
Yeah, there. Exactly. So, yeah, no, I missed it. But it was popular enough, that's for sure. I didn't hear much about the comic, the movie. But, I mean,
If
it's gone Criterion, there's got to be some artistic merit to the film.
Well, Armageddon has a Criterion release.
Yeah, but Armageddon's a good film.
Is it?
It's not a good film. It's a good movie.
All right.
From the man who brought you Transformers 1-9.
But it was a pretty good spectacle type movie that actually still had a story, still had characters. There's a little bit of heart.
And you got to see Ben Affleck just like cry like a baby.
That's not what Criterion's about, though.
No.
If it's not subtitled, F it.
Then why is Criterion releasing it?
I was joking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My personal taste.
Criterion did Chase and Amy as well.
Oh, come on. That is a fantastic movie.
No, they didn't really. Because it's one of the cheapo ones that you can find for $5.
Every single,
same with Case of Benjamin Button.
Every single copy of Chase and Amy is a Criterion edition. If you have it on DVD, that's your first Criterion.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It doesn't look like this. It doesn't have like the nice.
Oh, yeah.
Is it on Blu-ray and Criterion?
There's a couple. No, I think
it's
just
probably
the
same, like the same content and whatnot. But yeah,
like there's just a couple Criterions that are just
the
standard.
They're like the joke Criterion ones, like Criterion edition.
And that's what Armageddon should be too.
Yeah.
One of the joke ones.
I feel like they did another movie like Coyote Ugly or something stupid like that.
They better not have done Coyote Ugly because I'll
yeah. It was the first one.
Yeah, I saw it.
I'll just lose it.
It right at the top says Criterion Edition.
It does.
Like it shouldn't.
So, yeah, like I don't understand because I always thought the Criterion Edition, one of the big things about Criterion was all the extras that came with it. Like,
there's probably 7 commentaries on that.
Commentary tracks that are like really good. Well, I listened to all sorts of Kevin Smith commentary tracks. They're so hilarious. I can't remember which movie it was, but it was literally them sitting on a couch watching the movie. Smoking pot, drinking beer, and just talking about it. Jason Mewes passes out, falls asleep in front of the TV.
I think that was Dogma, wasn't it?
Ben Affleck kind of comes in halfway through. Goes the bomb in Phantoms. Anyways, it was funny.
Phantoms is a good movie.
Phantoms is a good movie.
Reindeer Games is horrible. I bought it and I can't even get through it.
There you go. No, Reindeer Games isn't great. Speaking of Kevin Smith and Chasing Amy, somebody, not mentioning any names, went to Toronto last weekend to visit Kevin Smith. Not really. It was the Jay and Silent Bob reboot roadshow. Mm-hmm. So Kevin Smith was at the Queen Elizabeth Theater. Is that the name of the theater at Exhibition Place?
You're talking to the wrong uncultured guys.
So he comes down, does a little intro, shows you the movie. He watches the movie with you, and he's like recording interactions and watching the crowd and stuff. And then afterwards, he gets up front and he answers questions and stuff like this. And it was a hoot. It was a blast. It was fun. It was late. The first showing was sold out, so they decided, okay, well, that sold out so quickly, we can do another show. It started, well, it was scheduled to start at 10 p.m. Actually started like 10 10:40, 10:30. And then afterwards, I mean, it was a good 20 minutes for him to answer the first question.
Yeah.
You know, and the problem is I kind of follow Kevin Smith with his podcast and some of this. Not a single thing he said answering that question is stuff that I hadn't already heard.
Yeah. You've obviously watched the Evening with Kevin Smith, right?
Yeah, I've got all those.
So I was at the second one, Evening with Kevin Smith, Evening Harder in Toronto.
Yeah.
And I think, I want to say the DVD was like 2-3 hours, I think, or yeah, maybe longer, but it was like, it was 5 hours of him talking. Yeah. And you're sitting there, and then I went and saw him again in another one that wasn't taped, and then it started to, I don't want to say get repetitive, but then I'm like, oh, I've heard this.
I've heard this anecdote, I've heard that anecdote.
Which is fine, but...
Yeah, I mean, the same thing with, you know, we won't speak too ill of the dead because we're not some people on this show, but when Stan Lee was doing all of his things... Yeah, you should look sheepish. When Stan Lee used to do all of his things, you'd get to the point where it'd be like, okay, that's the same story I've heard already. It's funny as heck, and he tells it well, but, you know, we've heard that Stan Lee anecdote before.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it happens. Like, how many times am I going to tell the stupid Walking Dead for $20 story?
Yeah.
Happens when you get old, right?
I told Joni I was going to quit, and she's like, well, Stan, why don't you do it your way then if you're going to quit anyways? He's like, you know what? I will. The Fantastic Four.
But yeah, it was a hoot. It was a fun show. I wish I had some cool stories of bumping into him in the hallway or something like this, but I don't. It's just we went to the show, and we did pull up in Uber X SUVs. I didn't know that was a thing. But this big, huge Suburban, blacked out Suburban comes out. And I'm not going to make any, you know, I'm not going to spin tails. But when I got out of the car, there were a few people in line that were a little bit confused. There was a few people going, no. Yeah. No.
Kev.
And then as soon as I got into line, they were like, oh, okay. No. Yeah, it's not Kevin Smith.
That's hilarious.
I got mistaken for Kevin Smith cosplayer once, totally unintentionally. I was at one of the fan expos. I can't even remember which one. Maybe, might have been 2007, 2006, 2005, somewhere around there. And just coincidentally, I was wearing cargo shorts, Van sneakers, a hockey sweater, and a ball cap, not flipped backwards, and I had the beard and mustache. And I was like, that's great Kevin Smith cosplay. And I was like...
Thank you.
What? I'm not cosplaying Kevin Smith. Oh, well.
It's like when the artists or writers leave their table and some, like, random guy from the show is sitting there just to tell people that they're not there. And, can I get your autograph, sir? Aww. Like, no.
Oh, yeah.
I came all the way to see you. It's like you don't know what he looks like. Or she. You don't know what they look like.
Well, I mean, let's be fair. Like, if you're reading comic books, you might not know what the artist looks like.
This is true. I've always looked them up, one to see what they've done that I have on hand that I enjoy, and then I do look at a picture of them as well.
Yeah, like I went to go see Denny O'Neill to get my hardcover of Hard Traveling Heroes signed, because I got it from Neil Adams, and he signed and did a little doodle inside. Like, I knew exactly who I was going to see. I knew exactly what table he was at. I wasn't, you know, just kind of randomly looking for autographs from people that I didn't really know. So, I don't know. I mean, I've seen those kids, you know, that they just at a table, can I have your autograph? Do you remember Whitcalf?
Mm-hmm.
We were at Whitcalf with the radio show, and we had this random kid just come out and goes, can I have your autograph? I'm like, I'm a podcaster, kind of, sort of, not really. I mean, we had, what, 12 episodes in the can back then?
He had a little book.
Yeah, well, no, he just, like, randomly, he didn't have anything, so we're just, like, looking around. We had those postcards made up, so I signed the back of the postcard and gave it to him. He's like, thanks. He just walked away, and I'm like, okay. Didn't even look at it, didn't even, like, I don't know, it was just weird. It was a weird interaction.
You know, you should have yelled to him as he's walking away, keep on listening, true believer.
Yeah.
I'm like, I will.
Maybe he was practicing on us before he hit, like, the big-time creators.
I've probably told this story on the radio once before, but...
Stan, we're listening.
My first convention that I ever tabled at was the Lindsay Comic Con. And one of my very first interactions tabling at a convention, some guy came up and he asks me for my autograph. He's acting really weird. He's got a hospital bracelet on his wrist. And he hands me a receipt to autograph, like from Shoppers Drug Mart or something. And so I sign it. And then he leaves and I was like, is this the life? Is this what I'm doing with my life?
That's awesome.
And yeah, I don't think you could have a better way to start your tabling career there.
I just got out of the mental ward. Could you sign my receipt?
Do you know where my pants are?
Do you validate parking?
That'll be $5.
No.
No, he's not Lou Frigga. He wouldn't charge for signing a receipt. Oh, man.
Lou would be like, you looked at me. Where's my $5?
That's crazy. Oh. That's funny as heck.
So I do still have one comic book to talk about. You guys didn't let me get to the ugly.
Oh, yes. One
more. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And so I'm a little late to reading this. It came out last year. An independent comic book. Independent Canadian comic book. That I'm going to say, reading it too late, is my favorite book that was released last year. Okay? And that is Frankenstein, A World of Gods and Monsters, by Graham Williams, Justin Schoff, Greg Menzies. I read this the other day. It's been on my shelf for a long time. I had one of those moments where I look at my collection and go, you stupid idiot, what are you doing? And I started to tidy it up because it was just becoming a mess. And I started rebagging and boarding some comics that I bought from Davis Dewsbury 2.5 years ago. And this was with those, because I had just stuck it on there. So I opened it up, and it's newsprint. And then I immediately went, hot damn, like I am in immediately opening that up and getting the newsprint. And the story, like I absolutely love this story. Like for an issue one, it was perfect. Gave me everything I need. Not too much information, just enough to go. Gave me some story that was good, and I want to read more. Like, I read this, and I just put it down and went, that was great.
You brought this, right, once?
Yeah.
I feel okay.
I might have even brought it once.
Yeah, he might have brought it.
Having received it from the Kickstarter, but not read it yet.
Yeah, Justin's a friend of ours from the Canadian Comic Book Alliance, and he's done a lot of work. He's done some Aurora Man stuff. He's done some other stuff.
Canadian Sentinel.
Yes, I was going to.
Which he did the art for Point Canadian Sentinel?
Yes.
Okay, because I can see it in the face.
And it's awesome. It's fantastic.
Nice.
So pedal the Canadian Sentinel. Come on, let's talk.
Pedal the Canadian Sentinel.
Where can people get it, Dan? They can get it at something. The website was on the back.
That's What are you even? You're talking about this. Yeah. We're talking about something different.
What?
Yeah. Where?
Okay. What are we talking about?
You don't know what Canadian Sentinel is?
Oh no, that's Dan's.
Book. Yeah.
You weren't paying attention.
Sorry, I was looking at the comic.
Yeah.
Canadian Sentinel number one, written by Dan Collins with art by Justin Schoff.
Yeah.
Justin's a fantastic artist. I mean, he can make anybody's writing look good. He's a great artist. I'll layer as much praise as you are willing to withstand here on Canadian Sentinel. I thought it was a fantastic book.
Yeah.
It was an awesome series. What was that? That was serialized in True Patriot Presents?
Yes, True Patriot Presents 9 through 12.
So if you go to Comixology...
Type in Dan Collins and you can see everything that I've written.
Was it like $2 an issue now?
Yeah, $1.99 an issue.
It's not much. It's a great anthology. There's other stories in there, but the Canadian Sentinel is fantastic. It's just awesome book. Needless to say, we'd love to see more.
Wow.
That's the problem with independent books, though.
If the writer would get off his ass and do something, then maybe.
Do you have anything written right now for it? No.
The answer to that is I had a partial issue written and then maybe forgot to save it. I'm not sure.
Oh, no.
And decided that was garbage anyways. Mm. But just last week, I was lying in bed thinking about how pathetic I am as a writer. And suddenly, the idea started coming.
There you go.
So there's a plan in... I can't quite say motion yet because it hasn't started in motion, but there's a plan to try to have another Canadian Sentinel release for July 1st.
There you go. Awesome book. Awesome stuff. You look anxious, like you want to show something else.
No, I'm wait. You have a DC previews here, so I was waiting for you to I assume there's something in there that you wanted to share.
Are you going to talk about the things you've canceled?
DC previews. Oh my gosh, did I ever cancel stuff? Oh my goodness. Aftershock came out with a new book. Ahoy came out with a new book. AWA added a fifth book to their lineup, and I'm just
Was it Girl Fights?
No, it was Year One.
Okay.
And I was just like, you know what? Okay, I'm struggling through Marauders. Marauders 4 never even showed up. I'm struggling through X-Force. It's kind of okay-ish. And I'm like, you know what? Eject button. They're gone. 2 issues of X-Force and 2 issues of Marauder almost every month. And, yeah, they're just gone. I just replaced them with other books. But the reason why I brought in the DC Previews magazine, because I was looking through this magazine. This is, like, all the new stuff that you can get. And if you there's all this stupid 80th anniversary stuff. And they kind of do what Marvel does. They kind of oversaturate, you know, stuff. Deceased Unkillables. I mean, do we really need that? But as you're flipping... I know I've ranted on this over and over and again that I seriously think comic books, the future of comic books is those young adult scholastic size books that the kids are reading. Like Dogman outsold both Batman and Spider-Man in 2016 or 2017. Anyways, just stuff like that, right? So I'm flipping through it and DC's got a ton of these books coming out. Graphic novels for kids is the lineup. They got one here called Primer. Like you just keep flipping and it's like graphic novels for young kids, graphic novels for young adults, you know. And then you flip through like 3 more pages of Aquaman and Batman, and then there's again another one. You know, they seem to be pushing a lot of these graphic novels out, and I hope they're doing well. I don't know. Like, is anybody reading them? Our age. I bought one for, I can't remember which one I bought, whether it was the Black Canary one or the Zatanna one. I gave it to Sam, and he said it was the first book he read in a long time since he's kind of anti-comic books right now, and he thoroughly enjoyed it. He thought it was the best book that he's read in a while. So.
But if it's the only book he's read in a while, that's not really high praise.
Well, yeah, I guess I probably worded that wrong.
But I don't know.
He dug it. So, I don't know. I mean, like, there's a new one coming out. It's Batman, when he kind of, as a like a tweenish teen adolescent, and he gets his first Batmobile. So I don't know how that works.
It's a coming of age story.
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne.
Who put the order in for the Batmobile?
They're kind of hip. It's kind of hip. Well, I'm sure it's got something to do with him stealing a car or him finding a car and fixing it and putting paint on it.
A little bumper sticker, Batman on board.
You know, New York Times bestselling author Laurie Halsey Anderson is writing Wonder Woman Tempest Tossed, an original graphic novel. It's 208 pages, $16.99 US, and you get 208 pages for $16.99. I just paid $4.99, I think, for 20 pages of Archie crap, $3.99 US, for this horrible book. So, I mean, this just makes sense. It just makes sense that this is the direction the industry is going in. You know, it just makes sense. I don't know what else to say.
It's good to see something new.
Yeah.
And this is called an original graphic.
I didn't do it. I didn't say it.
So there's the terminology officially.
I didn't say it. It is an original graphic novel that's coming out in trade paperback format. It's not coming out in hardcover format. Anyways, excellent. There's been a little bit of a debate going on. That's why we're laughing like maniacs over what constitutes a trade paperback, what constitutes a graphic novel. And the comics industry kind of misused the term trade paperback for many years. Trade paperback is a publishing term that's been around almost like 40s, 50s, all about... it's a physical type of book. Nice, slick pages, soft cover. That's a trade paperback. A mass media paperback is crappy cover, crappy pages. And then, you know, a hardcover is great pages, slick paper. So now that comics are getting a little bit more mainstream and are being, you know, now there's a New York Times bestseller list, the old comic book definition is kind of not jibing with the publishing industry's definition of what constitutes an original graphic novel, what constitutes a trade paperback. So it's causing some people some nomenclature issues. Some confusion, but I mean, it's English language. English language changes all the time. You know, I have no idea what was it, fleck or fleek? Come on, Adam, you're the hipster.
For what?
There's a word, F-L-E-K, for all the hipster kids.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, see what I mean? Like, we don't even know what this is. My kids are like, oh, you're so fleek, Dad. No, they're not saying that. Although I did get called woke because I ate a quinoa salad the other day. I know, right?
Woke to what?
I don't know. Nutrition, I guess. Oh. I don't know.
Dad, you're so woke.
Not being one of those guys who like steak, meat, and potato. Potato, meat, and potato. Veggie, meat, potato.
Yeah, what'd you have for your next dinner?
It's toast or
steak, turtle. Meat, and potatoes.
No, actually, it's really pathetic, but I like that quinoa bowl so much, I ordered it again for the next two lunches. Good. So I had it 3 days in a row. It was yummy. Chicken breast and quinoa and spinach and... I
hate
it.
Quinoa.
Oh, I don't.
It's my mortal enemy.
I hate kale. Oh. Kale is like, I mean, I've seen rabbits look at kale and go, no way, man. I ain't touching that stuff. Forget about that.
Yep. Rabbits eat carrots.
No. Here's a segue. Adam's trying hard for a segue.
It's true. Rabbits eat carrots. And who's named after a carrot? Well, that would be Kakarot from Dragon Ball Z, which is a book that I brought in.
Is that even true?
This
that
is 100%
he's named
true.
After a carrot?
Yes. And
you could have just said, I have something to talk about.
No, I wanted to segue, and what? I segued hard.
Wow. You segued so hard just like that I'm going to barf.
There's King Vegeta. His little brother's name is Tabble. So if you take their names together, it's vegetable. Yeah. So...
What? Do that
it's,
again.
Vegeta, one of the bad guys, his little brother's name is Tabble. So together they're vegetable.
Vegeta.
Yep.
Anyways, somebody's got a cow. Sense of humor.
I brought in one of my Dragon Ball graphic novel trade paperbacks.
Are these one of those guys? Are these those guys? No, that's Naruto that runs weird.
This does run backwards because in Japan you're
no, he meant that.
Oh, no. They don't run like idiots.
He meant the Area 51 run.
Yes. So in Japan and then North America, they brought the books over again, but they colored them. So the original comics aren't colored, and then they colorized them, which is actually really cool. So watching it's like you're watching the TV or reading the TV show, and it's all colored. And if you ever read a Dragon Ball comic... An episode on TV, which, like, a fight will go on for, like, 30 episodes, is actually, like, one volume of the books, because they don't have to keep on adding filler
into
it.
So they don't pad the comic out.
Yeah, and the reason why the TV show is padded out is because the comics and the TV show ran at the same time, so as the TV show caught up to the comic, they had to fill up the TV show for the comic to get further
ahead.
They
have just
ahead.
Done what The Walking Dead, or what, yeah.
What?
Game of Thrones did. Just make up their own stories.
Some have for TV shows. I know I haven't watched it. Full Metal Alchemist did that. And then later on they did a second series which retold the actual true storyline of the comics. But no, they didn't do that for this. They did have like side stories throughout the TV show to pad time. But yeah.
Now this is one of those books you gotta read the panels backwards too?
Yeah, so it's... Yeah, at the very back of the book, or the front technically... It'll say, I think it will show you how to read it, right?
I don't know.
Dear North American idiot, you must read it.
Well, back in the day, Viz Comics used to release the Dragon Ball manga in comic form, standard comics. And
yeah,
then
with the panels recut.
Yeah, and they flipped it for the readers. And I believe that they flipped all the English text on the page as well, because some of their hats would say like their names and whatnot.
Yeah,
so yeah, they kept
this. I
don't
see a key here, but.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I just can't do it. After 40.
There was a...
Dan, take a look.
After 45 years.
The artwork's beautiful.
After 45. Yeah, it's a nice book, but after 45 years of reading comic books one way, my brain just can't wrap around it.
There was a Pokemon free comic book day issue last year that was set up the same, and I was reading it with Amelia, and I read a few panels. And, like, I read it from the back because I knew that was how you were supposed to read it, but I read a page, and I was like, I think we did that wrong. We're going to start again.
There's a guy who did an experiment. He put gears in a bicycle. Like right now, when you hop on a bicycle, you turn the handlebars to the left, the wheel goes to the left. He put this gear system where if you turn to the left and went to the right, And if you went to turn to the right, the bike went to the left. And it took him a good week to kind of figure it out. But once he figured it out, everything was fine. He could ride this bike normally. He put the bike down. A month later, he got back on the bike. He couldn't ride it again. So he got to a point where his brain was, okay, fine, no problem. This is how you ride this wonky bike. And he could successfully do it. But the second he stopped practicing and stopped thinking about it, his brain immediately went back to 30 years of normal bicycle riding. Yeah. And he just lost it again. Couldn't do it. It took him another week to figure out how to ride this backwards bike again. Because your brain just is just, you know, it's that's the reason why they say you never forget how to ride a bike, because it's all just muscle memory.
There's a sound effects glossary.
Oh, wow. Is there schlurp?
No.
And glurp. Zump.
Zump.
Zump. That's about as good as
that good. Sounds right.
Now, Dragon Ball, they're the one that... my biggest problem with anime and manga and stuff is there's always that one panel where somebody's too excited. It's just his head with stars and rays going out of his head. You know? Oh, my God, a nurse. And what's his name? I was gonna say Zach. That's not his name.
Like this, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's
like
just
the over animation.
The rice is so yummy. You know, or whatever it was. Like the one movie I saw, it was just ridiculous. They were literally eating lunch, and the one character had this spaz out effect because the rice was really yummy, and I was just like, that. It seems like a really bad reason to have such a huge.
Wait, who ate quinoa three lunches in a row?
Oh, but it was good.
But was good. It good or
but
was
there was
it
no,
good?
There was, yeah. It was awesome! I know, he's the power of the quinoa! No. No. Oh, well. I did read another book. My editor at First Comics News goes, hey, Marty, can you write a real quick review for me? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Thinking it's a 20-page comic, I'll bang it off real quick. He sends me a PDF, 400-page novel, book, reference book, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, there's no way I'm going to be able to read this and do a quick review. I finally read the thing. It was awesome. It's called Secondary Superheroes of the Golden Age by Lou, and I'm going to butcher this, Mugin, M-O-U-G-I-N, Mugin. Oh, my God, Mugin, that's Polish for... someone from Africa. But it's all about secondary superheroes of the golden age of comics. Characters from companies that didn't survive, characters that changed, like the original Catman, the original Blue Beetle's in here. Frankenstein was a superhero for a little while. My favorite one was, I wrote it in the review, The Target and the Targeteers. Like, it's just redonkulous. But it's a fun book, and since we're all about the Canadian Whites and all the strange Canadian characters, we kind of like these kind of books. The only problem is this thing is $99 for a softcover Canadian.
Wow. Oh my like, God. I paid $100 for the Heroes from the Homefront.
Yeah.
Hardcover
this,
one.
It's an expensive book, but it's a fun book. And if I ever find it on sale, I'm definitely buying it. So that was my week.
And that's our show. You can talk us out this time, though, Marty.
All right. We got the podcasts are available for download at heykidscomics.ca, but also available on every podcast service that we can think of, Apple, Google, blah, blah, blah. We just changed the graphics for it, evicted Sam, brought in Chris and Dan. So let's go.
Dan, you're on it now.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like the Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico.
rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?